The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hi, Dr. Ray. I love your show.
Let me show you what it looks like to be a holy person, and maybe you'll want to be holy like me.
You just patted yourself on the back.
You seem like an honest guy.
But you're a psychologist. Do you have some advice?
I don't know. I'm not going to tell you what to do.
You're my second favorite Italian person.
I think you have a way of making people feel relaxed.
She needs to feel the consequences of being a jerk.
You know, I was looking for a deeper answer.
Obviously, I'm a failure. Obviously, I'm inept.
Yes. You are awesome. Keep up the good fight, my friend.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Yeah, well, here's a joke that I got from my kids, and little kid jokes really can get to you. Every Thanksgiving, one of the kids, "Hey, Dad, what did the turkey say when he got an invitation to dinner?" And then you have to repeat it. "I don't know. What did the turkey say when he got an invitation to dinner?" "No thanks, I'm stuffed." And then they bust themselves up. Now, one of the rules of telling jokes or making a crack is that you do not laugh at your own stuff. Not a good thing. When you laugh at your own stuff, that's kind of like saying, "Isn't that funny? Don't you think that's funny? I'll give you a cue. I'm going to laugh there." Now, my wife is the first to point out to me. She said, "You laughed at something you said." "I did?" She said, "Yes, you did." I said, "Oops, I don't want to do that." I said, "I want people to laugh at it." And she says, "They do laugh at it, Ray. They laugh at it a lot. But you're being serious when they laugh." "I know. That hurts. I'll try to figure out something." Okay. Dr. Ray Guarendi, after that badinage, that, what was the name of that? Persiflage? There was a word I just learned the other day. I'll find it. It means light banter. You know, cute little talk. Persiflage, I think it is. Sounds French. Program here is The Doctor Is In. This is Look Back Friday. It is an idea we came up with, myself, my producer, Mike Jones, over at Ave Maria Radio Communications. I said, we got to do something here because I'm getting frustrated. I want to talk more about these calls and the nature of radio. You have to cut it short sometime. He said, okay, well, what can we do? I said, how about if we take certain select calls? Andrew Kruchek can edit them. He likes to edit me out. I've been noticing this. He takes out an awful lot of what I say. He says, yeah, well, it's not very good. I said, well, yeah, but you won't have anything left. He goes, well, you'll fill it in. Maybe we'll have to do a look back, where we look back on the calls that I've looked back on. Look back squared. So we take these calls, and then I get to say more about them, and that's the focus of these Friday shows, for the most part. Every once in a while, we'll do a live Friday show, because there are folks who can only call in on Fridays. So we'll get to your calls momentarily. This was an article, apparently written for the Washington Post. It's in the Oregonian. It's a newspaper. This was probably about 5-6 months ago. She starts out, "When my daughter was born in 2005, managing cell phones at a sleepover wasn't even on my parenting radar. 13 birthdays later, I agreed to host a slumber party with 13 girls." The woman is amazingly brave. Oh my, she's my heroine. "They'd play games, watch movies, eat ice cream, sleep in a giant pile on the living room floor. But cell phones were my main concern." So what she did, she told her daughter about 11 o'clock, get a basket, ask the 11 girls who had phones. Now, it's interesting. Now, there are 13 girls. Now, maybe she's counting her daughter as one of those. I don't think so. So 11 girls had phones. Two of them didn't. Interestingly enough, and you assume these are all roughly the same age girls, to pass them in. Three phones were put in the basket when the daughter went around. So mom picked up the basket and walked around to the girls who, you know why they didn't turn them in? They were still on their phones. So mom said, please put them in. Five more. Okay, so now you're up to 8 out of 13. Mom said, I put it on the table, made a general request. Anybody holding the phone, put it in with the others. I went to bed. 10 minutes later, she said, I collected the phones from my daughter. There's 9, my daughter said. That's pretty good, right? Now, mom said it in a cute sort of way, somewhere, shoved under pillows or stuffed animals, were 2 remaining phones. I looked at my daughter's face, and I could see her silently begging me not to make a scene, not to go on a search, not to embarrass her in the middle of her birthday party. So basically, the mother backed off. I would not have. I just said, okay, guys, come on. We got 2 more phones here. Why is this? Well, first of all, these are not just 2 phones for the 2 girls. These are 2 phones for everybody now. These are smartphones. They can go anywhere. And all the kids there, just because you took their phone doesn't mean they don't have access to the 2 phones that are still there. You got a supervisory problem as a parent. And it tells me something about this parent. And by the way, I do see this. When I read these articles, I see this all the time. And one of the tenors, one of the themes in these articles is, I have to respect where our culture is on all this. And I have to respect that my children don't want me to do this. So I'll try to be reasonable. That's what mom's doing here. So she said, I want to collect the phones. Well, she didn't get all of them. So she thought that she had no right to say, hey, guys, there's 2 phones missing. Come on, please. May I have them? Because she said that would create a scene. How would that create a scene? Now, the only way it would create a scene is that the 2 girls would hide them and would not give them up. Now, I don't know what I would do about that, to tell you the truth. I really do not know what I would do. I might say, until I have the phones, I'm sitting in here and I'm going to fall asleep in here. You guys want that? So I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I don't know who has the phones. I'm going to go upstairs to the bathroom. When I come back, let me see the other phones in there. Put them in. This is like a gun buyback, you know? The cops go around, okay, we'll buy back your guns, kind of thing. But mom didn't, all right? So she said this. Parenting in the age of technology comes with its own set of challenges. And none is clearer to me, a newly minted parent of young teenagers, than how we regulate and monitor cell phone use. In the past 2 years, my daughter has been invited to parties that use phones for scavenger hunts, photos, making movies. What happens at 2 a.m. when the games are done and the parent is left with a group of kids? All with relatively unsupervised access to phones. I don't know if it's relatively unsupervised. It sounds like it's unsupervised. And the only way it would be supervised would be if the parents had parental controls on it, which it doesn't smell like that's the case here. These are 13-year-olds. All of them had cell phones. Smartphones. This is from a woman named Deborah, and it was with a V, Deborah Heitner. She wrote a book called Screenwise, Helping Kids Thrive and Survive in Their Digital World. Quote, what we see with sleepovers is what I would call diminished inhibition that comes with sleep deprivation. Rather poetic there. A kid who makes sensible decisions at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. might not be the kid who makes sensible decisions after hours of junk food, no sleep, and being worn down by peers. Okay, the only thing I would add to that as a shrink is that it's more likely that the kid who's going to make bad decisions in the middle of the night makes them during the middle of the day too. Now she tells an interesting, she closes with this. Our first experience with a late night lapse in judgment came 2 years ago, when my son woke up to a text that said, all right, now stop right there. Just stop right there. How old is the son? Now, I get the impression from this article the daughter is the oldest and she's 13. So how old is the son and he woke up to a text? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe she's having a sleepover. Because she said, as a newly minted parent of teens. Okay. All right, maybe not. Maybe not. She said he woke up with to a text that said, "We have taken your sister." Her friends thought it was funny. They sent it from her phone in the middle of the night. But my groggy son was convinced his sister had been kidnapped. He calmed down. Only when we called his sister to find out she was fine. It happens that she had been asleep and she had no idea what had happened. The kids did it. Here's a mom's walking with one foot in the culture and one foot in her parental instincts. On one hand, she says, "Gee, I really, really don't like what they have access to with these phones. I can't monitor them. They're all at my house. I feel partially responsible." But on the other hand, I don't know if I can be so rigid as to say, "Okay, please, all phones are turned in. I'll live with two of them still out there because I don't want to be unreasonable." You know, those of you who turned them in, thank you because you wanted to. But those of you who didn't, well, okay. See, I just see that as parental surrender, but it's so very common these days. When we come back, we have a caller who wants her adult daughter to apologize for things she's done in the past. Obviously, the daughter sees no reason for this. She either doesn't think she's done anything wrong, or if she has done something wrong, she's not going to give her mother the satisfaction of saying out loud, "I was wrong." So we'll find a little more details about that from Laura in New York, when we come back on The Doctor Is In on this Look Back Friday.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
It's that time of year again. We're celebrating our annual summer clearance sale with 10 acres loaded with vehicles marked down to the lowest prices of the year. Hi, I'm Dan Hall from Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. And if you're in the market for a new or certified pre-owned vehicle and love to be treated with dignity and respect, then look no further. We're celebrating 20 years serving Livingston County with payments as low as $199 per month on new 2019 Jeep Cherokee and Jeep Compass, and $299 per month on Jeep Grand Cherokee and Ram Crew Cab 4x4. Come in and experience the difference or visit us online at PinckneyChrysler.com.
Brought to you by the nonprofit Seton Home Study.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. My wife and I have used Seton Home curriculum for our homeschooling. One of the great things about it, you learn about your faith, not just in religion, but history and English and science and reading. Their curriculum uses saints as role models. I don't think they've used me yet. Children are prepared to rationally explain and defend their faith. It permeates the instruction. You want to give your kids not only a top-notch education, but an understanding of their faith as it permeates the subjects that matter in their lives. I don't know if there's too much better than Seton homeschooling. We used it a lot. You are the best teacher for all of that. Let Seton get right beside you and give you the material you need. Go to SetonHome.org. SetonHome.org. Psychologists do a lot of tests. I mean, that was our bailiwick. When we first came on the scene, you know, the med doctors, the psychiatrists were the mental health people. Well, the psychologists entered the scene with tests. We could do testing. We could test the mind, test intellect. We had our tools. So we had to develop tests. There are tests, and I've not seen these in any conglomeration, if you will, of psychology tests, but these are parenting tests to find out if you're ready to be a parent. If you want to take the Ingenuity test, this is for probably, I'd say, kindergarten parents. Take an egg carton, get a pair of scissors, and a pot of paint. Turn that into an alligator. Then, next, take a toilet paper tube, turn it into a Christmas candle. Use only scotch tape and a piece of foil. Last project that you have to put together as a parent. Get a milk carton, a ping pong ball, and an empty box of Cocoa Puffs. Make your kid an exact replica of the Eiffel Tower. There you go. You pass that test, you are ready to be a parent. Okay. Laura from New York is tormenting herself. She believes that she deserves an apology. She'd like to hear it. And this call wouldn't have come in if the daughter, the adult daughter now, had apologized for what we're going to find out and why she won't, we may find out.
I have a 28-year-old daughter who is doing fine now. But when she was in high school, the latter years of high school and in college, she caused us a tremendous amount of pain, very disrespectful. She also was diagnosed at 15 with type 1 diabetes, so there was an emotional aspect to her, you know, behavior, I think. I mean, a physical aspect to her behavior. But nowadays, when she speaks disrespectfully to me, I feel like I react in certain ways, the way I did back then, which was, it was very painful. But we're not allowed to talk about those years. She doesn't want to talk about those years, and I don't know if that's a good thing. And I don't know if it's a good thing also that she never attempted to say that she was sorry for the pain she caused us.
Laura, why do you think, you said she was doing better, but you said also that she can be very disrespectful.
Yes, she can be at times, and usually I'm the brunt of it. I seem to be the one who, you know, is the target of, when things come up and she gets angry, she can be disrespectful, yes.
Does she do that to your husband?
No.
Because he doesn't give her any opinions. She doesn't like when you tell her anything, does she?
Exactly. That's right.
Mm-hmm. Well, good news, bad news.
Mm-hmm.
The good news is we can stop that disrespect. The bad news is you're going to have to shut your mouth.
Mm-hmm. Is that what I'm supposed to do?
Yeah. She's 27, dear. And whatever foolishness and dumbness, even immorality that she goes through and gets into, you've already learned many times over that she doesn't want to hear it from you.
Mm-hmm.
Don't tell me what I'm doing wrong. Don't tell me how to run my life. Don't give me suggestions on how to make it better. Don't talk about the guy I'm dating. Don't give me your stuff about I'm not going to church. Don't, Mom, just shut up.
Mm-hmm.
Basically. I mean, she may not come right out and say that, but you know that's the message, right?
Right, yes.
Yeah. I wouldn't expect her to apologize. You know why?
Why?
Two reasons. One, and this is giving her the benefit of the doubt. She may be embarrassed by a lot of that. She just doesn't want to admit mm-hmm. to it again.
Mm-hmm.
That's one. And here's the other one, which I think is more likely. She doesn't think she did all that much wrong. You ever pick mm-hmm. up on that from her? When you've broached the subject, Laura, and you've kind of brought up some of that stuff from the past, and she got defensive about it.
Let me put it this way. I never have brought it up because I know that it's a really off-the-table topic. I mean, it's just, so I've never brought it up.
I wouldn't. You're wise. earwise. And I'll tell you, if you want to have a smoother relationship with your daughter, you're probably going to have to recognize that all the good motherly wisdom that you have, you can't give to her.
Mm.
You don't want to hear it. And that's probably why your husband doesn't get it, because he doesn't say anything. My experience is that moms are more likely to offer guidance about life matters with their adult children, especially their adult daughters, than fathers are. I don't want to get into all the reasons for that. Fathers being perhaps less involved, fathers being clueless about it, fathers taking it a little more in stride. There's a lot of reasons for that. Probably just a different style of communication. Women tend to be more communicative than men. They interchange verbally more. When you have an adult child who is living poorly or who has had a rocky adolescence and young adulthood, and now just bristles when you offer anything, the most benign thing. If you say something that you think couldn't be a source of an ugly comeback, and then you find out it was, maybe you say something like, "So, did you meet Father John at the Mass Sunday? Mom, I don't need you always checking up on whether I'm going to Mass." Your intent was not to check up. It was an innocent question. And you were shocked. But when you hear something like that, take it as a sign that this child is telling you, don't give me any advice or guidance at all. I had an email when we had a previous call about something similar, and the email said, then you're supposed to just surrender your parenthood. You're supposed to surrender your God-given right to guide your children. I think I wrote back a couple sentences, said something to the effect of course not. When they're minors and they're living in your home. But once they're adults and out, you really can only give advice and guidance when it's sought or accepted. That's the irony. If you have a decent relationship with your adult child, and you can. You can give all kinds of thoughts and ideas. I just got a call on a break from my son here. He's 22 years old. I called him back on the break because he wanted to ask me about something. He always does. He's always asking me about something. And I give him my opinions about a lot of things, and he doesn't ask me about that, but he accepts it because he and I have that kind of relationship. There are others of my children I don't say a word because I don't want to get a stare that says I got it taken care of, or I don't need to hear that, or whatever, just a different personality of that person. And I think what happens is when Laura says, you know, she's disrespectful, and she said also, interesting, did you hear what she said? I said, well, you know, if you bring that up, she's going to get defensive. And she said, I don't bring it up. Some topics are off the table, which means I'm not going to bring it up because I know what she's going to react like. So obviously she's had some experience in related conversations that the daughter will get defensive, so she doesn't go there anymore, which is smart. Very smart. Very hard for parents to surrender that ability, that privilege, if you will, to guide a child when they're a young adult and they're acting dumb or they're acting counter to the way they were raised. That's more often what happens. They're acting counter to the way they were raised. And we feel compelled to still straighten them out. And I think part of it is, because for many of us, underneath it all, there's the idea that what did I do wrong that they think and act this way? And maybe I can straighten it out now. I've still got a chance.
today's programming on 990 WDEO is brought to you in part by a gift made from our day sponsor, the Catholic Biblical School of Michigan, bringing the Bible to life. New classes are starting this September in parishes across Michigan. An online class is also available. Find out more by visiting the Catholic Biblical School of Michigan online at cbsmich.org. If you have a message you want to share, be a day sponsor at 877-288-1077.
Whether you want to stay cool in the summer or warm in the winter, your HVAC systems need to be running right, and that is exactly what my dad does.
Hi, I'm Ron Garmo from Running Right Heating and Cooling. We install, service, and maintain both commercial and residential units. We also install generators for those times when storms knock out power. Call today at 248-884-1704.
Or find Running Right Heating and Cooling online and on Facebook.
Beacon Skin and Surgeries is a comprehensive dermatology center on the border of Troy and Rochester Hills, south of M59, and in Dearborn, west of Telegraph. Beacon Skin and Surgeries perform full skin exams and focus on the diagnosis and treatment of all types of skin cancer and precancerous lesions. All are board-certified dermatologists and fellowship-trained surgeons. Call 248-852-1900. Beacon Skin and Surgeries, a beacon for patient care. 248-852-1900.
Ave Maria Radio is having a Christmas in July sale going on right now at AveMariaRadio.net. Deck your halls with great books, talks, and other products for friends, family, and even for yourself. Products featuring Father John Ricardo are on sale, including a 20% discount on all single show copies of Christ is the Answer. Just apply the promo code CIAJULY19 at checkout. Don't miss out on Ave Maria Radio's Christmas in July sale going on right now at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
I don't know. I had an experience last night. I was looking at the paper. I was just kind of looking at this, and this high-profile sports figure is known as getting in fights and all kinds of trouble with his teammates and even with the law, and he married some supermodel. I said something like, I don't get this. These guys can act like major league jerks, and these beautiful women are still around them. And my wife looked at me and said, "Thank you, Ray." I don't know. Do you know what she was saying? I'm not really sure I picked up on that. Okay. Look back Friday. Let's see what we got. How much time? Okay, that's two okays. That's not good. Those are filler words. They don't belong there. Patricia from M.O., that's Missouri. That's Missouri. Montana is M.T., she would like some suggestions on how to get through to a niece. Well, let's find out what the niece is doing first.
My relative is my niece, and I found out about it from my brother. I come from a family that never talked to me. They never really shared things. Okay, this is what's going to happen, and I would ask my brother, her father, how is Cindy doing? Oh, she's fine. She's fine. He never really got her diagnosed, even though I told him when she was about 10, I said, you need to get her evaluated. No. She's just lying.
What was she doing at age 10, Patricia, that you thought?
She was lying about her homework. Oh, well, I did my homework. I just left it at school.
Well, doesn't mean she needs evaluated just because she's lying about her.
No,
story.
But there were other indications that he was shouting at her a lot, and I don't know, just the way she acted was
odd. You thought she was odd.
I think she was odd, although that's not a very good description. And I didn't have a lot of experience with mental problems, except living on my family that never talked to me or never told me anything was going on.
It's pretty understandable they wouldn't, right, Patricia? I mean, you figure he's going to be maybe ashamed or not understand it or figure it's a private thing. So he's not going to tell you, I have a daughter who has given us a lot of trouble and she seems to be struggling with some mental problems. See, that's understandable that he wouldn't. I know a lot of people who don't do that. I'm not saying it's good. I'm just simply saying that's what they do. Right now, for your niece, what's your question?
I'm just trying to see, are there books or there is there something I can do to talk to her better?
Talk to her normal.
Yeah, just, I do. I
just because she has certain symptoms.
Limitations. Yeah.
Yeah, that would indicate there's times she may be thinking incorrectly, unrealistically, or perhaps hearing voices, or whatever it is that got her the schizophrenic diagnosis. Much of the time, she can converse quite normally, and you can ask her how things are going for her, what's happening, as you would a support of a friend or a relative. You don't have to worry about what you're going to say. You don't have to worry that if you say the wrong thing, you're going to throw her into a psychotic break. That's not going to happen.
No, I'm not worried about that. But anytime I ask her how things are going or what she's doing, she'll just say, oh, fine.
That's
everything's
good.
Fine.
Okay. Well, you can accept that.
And I said, listen, if there's ever anything you want to talk about, give me a call,
You're doing cool. One of the things I've learned as a psychologist is that people will talk to you if they want to. There's this thing called want that really is at the base of whether somebody does something or doesn't. You can dig around for all kinds of psychic reasons, historical motives. You can. And in one of my books, I talk about all the different ways that people justify conduct or resist doing the right thing. But the last chapter, I call it the... It's either, I forget, I wrote this book about 4 years ago, the final resistance rationale. I call them resistance rationales. This is why I don't want to do what is good for me to do. And I said the final resistance rationale, underlying all of the reasons that I might give you or that you might think I have, I don't want to. That is a very fuzzy motive, but it's a very common one. I don't know why this niece doesn't want to talk to Patricia. I have no idea. You know, obviously, I don't think Patricia knows. It may be that the niece is ashamed of what she might say. It may be she thinks this is none of your business. It may be she thinks I'm just fine. I don't know what you want me to talk about. It may be she's not a very introspective person, so she doesn't really look at herself and her own motives and her own conduct. You know people like that. I don't know. I do know this, though. I think if Patricia wants to have a little more open relationship with her niece, then she's got to work on a relationship first without necessary communication first.
But Dr. Ray... Communications are part of any deep relationship.
Well, at some point, they may enter in. But in the beginning, this is just a pleasant time spent together. She may take her niece out to breakfast. And they sit and talk about life and people and the food and the nice server that just came by. And that's the extent of the breakfast. The niece is fine with that. And although Patricia may be of the mindset that says, no, there's more things going on here, dear niece. Why don't you talk to me about this stuff? I can help you. I know that when I was growing up, nobody talked about anything, and I know how frustrated I got because of that. So maybe you and I can sort of link. But if that's not where the niece is, then you're not going to get anywhere. You almost have to slow down the pace of the relationship so you don't push on it too hard and say, come on. More openness. More sharing. Let's get down to something that really matters to talk about. Yeah, the eggs are good and the bacon is too crisp, but that's not really the stuff of relationships here. Sometimes you just have to talk about the eggs. Talk about the bacon. Because... that's all where the other person is going to go. I see this in therapy. You would think that a therapeutic environment would naturally lead someone to explore themselves and their motives and their conduct. And much of the time it does. but sometimes it doesn't. And there is an establishment of some kind of relationship where they can trust you. And so, perhaps my first questions are just very simple, very benign, very non-threatening life questions. How many kids you got? Oh, so so when you had the three under five, that must have been a load, huh? And you just carry on kind of the pleasant, tell me about your life sort of conversation. So I think Patricia can do it. I think she might just have to accept the pace of the niece as opposed to the pace that she would like.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
Ciao, Sorelli and Fratelli, sisters and brothers. Teresa Tomio here from Catholic Connection. Through the years, so many of you have contacted me asking for my advice on traveling to my favorite place in the world, Italy. Being that I've had the blessing of visiting the country more than 50 times now, I've decided to respond to those special requests by introducing Tease Italy at TravelItalyExpert.com, a website for all things Italia where you'll receive insider tips on where to eat, stay, shop, play, and most importantly, pray. At TravelItalyExpert.com, you'll discover, with the help of our key partners, Ave Maria Radio and Corporate Travel, this beautiful Catholic country through videos, blogs, and even personal travel consulting. So whether you're planning that upcoming visit or just want to learn more about Italy, connect with me on TravelItalyExpert.com. Ciao for now. We'll see you online at Tease Italy, TravelItalyExpert.com.
On the next Cresta in the Afternoon.
Our topics during Cresta in the Afternoon toggle between church teaching and then using that teaching to shine a light on our world. We'll look at Christ and culture, church and world, religion and public life, from abortion to Zechariah and everything in between. Biblical criticism, Hollywood productions, academic debate, family and love, prayer and spirituality.
Cresta in the Afternoon from 4 to 6 on 990 Ave Maria Radio.
Dr. Ray Guarendi, thank you so much for joining me here on The Doctor's Inn. I appreciate the company. TV show, Living Right with Dr. Ray, in its eighth season now. And soon, starting to tape season number nine, we will, God willing, be heading to Buffalo, Station of the Cross Turf, out there for four programs in August. And closer to the date, we'll give you more details on that. And Jim Wright and the folks there at the Station of the Cross, along with their affiliates, hopefully cloud up that audience, get a bunch of people there. It's wonderful. More people, the better the show goes. High energy level. Okay, let's see what we got here on this Look Back Friday. Mary from Oregon. Her daughter met a depressed, or at least that's what it appears, a depressed young lady. The daughter, apparently studying or getting to know this girl or hearing about her from herself, now thinks she could be depressed too.
I have a 12-year-old daughter who has this school year, been hanging out with a new child who came to her class. That child's past has been pretty turbulent. She had a mother who died when she was 6 years old, and now she has a stepmom. She was diagnosed with depression and going to counseling. She was in the past cutting herself and so on. So my daughter has been good friends with her, and somehow she has been self-diagnosing herself. And she says, this looks like I do have depression as well, and I do need help. And
wait a minute. This is your daughter saying this about herself?
No, she's saying that, she has a friend who has had a lot of problems, and they hang out together. And now she says about herself, I think I have depression, and you need to give me help because my emotions are so extreme. And that's true because since it's in her wiring, since she was a little child, she was always going from one extreme to another, either super happy to super sad and mad, or extreme in general. And now that she hits puberty, she's trying to figure out all of it, how the hormones work and how to deal with it. So a lot of times she's mad at me that I restrict her freedoms, because that's what I have to do with internet and phone and all of those.
Alrighty, let me jump in here. Let me jump in here, Ann. If your daughter is spending a lot of time around a young lady her age who is struggling with life, who has a very turbulent family life, then it wouldn't be unusual for your daughter to get pulled into some of that and to start looking at her own behavior, her own emotions, as similar to this girl's. So the first question for me as a parent would be, I'm not sure how much I'd want her hanging around with this young lady. That's the first thing.
Well, the only time she hangs out with her is at school. She doesn't have any after-school activities with her or anything like that.
Okay. You can't do anything about that. So, all right. Secondly, I would probably tell your daughter, honey, you're not in a position to diagnose yourself. You're not in a position to decide that you're depressed. First of all, I look at that. And second of all, if I think it's something that needs to be looked into further, then we're going to have somebody assess you, a professional. Now, you said something significant.
So would you take her to the doctor and have
not
diagnosed?
I can't say that on the basis of what you're telling me. But I wouldn't automatically do that because an awful lot of 12-year-olds are, and you said a key line, she gets unhappy and mad when I restrict her.
Yes.
Here's the question, Anne. If you allowed her to do everything she wanted, would she complain of being depressed?
Well, there are certain things that I cannot change and make her happy about. And she's basically, putting that on the table. And you cannot do anything about it. And I am depressed. I don't like it. And,
If you wish, you can say, well, honey, if you're absolutely convinced that you're that unhappy, we're going to let you talk to somebody. Now, my experience in these cases is when kids do this, they are not necessarily depressed. They're dissatisfied. They are unhappy because life isn't quite going the way they want. They're not getting the freedom they want. They are seeing other children get to do a lot more. And as a result, their social existence isn't as free as they would like it to be. Now, if you have a kid...
That is very true.
Okay. So if you have a kid who, by temperament, is a little blue, then it may manifest itself in more unhappiness. Now, does that mean she's depressed? Not necessarily. Depression is a judgment call. It's a judgment call. You have to decide if it's significant enough, if it's long-lasting enough, if it's interfering enough with life. Oh, boy. I would say going back 20, 30 years, I saw a significant increase in parents coming in wondering if their child was depressed. As I talked to the parent, a fair amount of the time, I found that there were either behavior problems or significant differences between what the child wanted to be able to do and what the parents allowed them to do. I found that the kids were spoiled. Some of them, not everyone, but some were spoiled. They got what they wanted when they wanted it, and they became progressively more disenchanted
when life didn't meet their needs right away quick. Or they ran into peer problems, and some of the peers were pretty ugly. They were hard to deal with. It affected the kid. There were all kinds of reasons why the parents wondered if their kids were depressed, short of actual clinical depression at the base of their problems. If there were depressive feelings, dissatisfaction, disenchantment, they were often the byproduct of social behavioral problems. Notice a little bit what Mary was saying. She, here and there, she made the observation her daughter gets mad when she doesn't kind of get what she wants, mom giving her the freedom. The other thing was this young lady, this 12-year-old young lady who's going to a therapist, who probably, according to mom, had been diagnosed depressed. Mom said her mother died when she was six. There's been turbulence in her life. I would guess that this young lady is bouncing quite a bit, that maybe there isn't stability there yet. Maybe she's being too culturally raised. This happens all the time. These kids are being raised by the culture, by smartphones and by computers and by social media. That is a recipe for depression. The research is coming in all over the place that says kids who are heavily immersed in that stuff are much more likely to have mood problems as a result of their immersion. The mood problems didn't come first. They weren't depressed first, and then they turned to social media to try to feel better. No, they were immersed in social media, and then the problems gained momentum. So, if I were to guess on the basis of what Mary said, my guess would be that this young lady that her daughter's hanging around has more problems than the diagnosed depression. My guess would be that this young lady probably has more freedom than Mary's daughter. She probably is more worldly than Mary's daughter. That would be my guess. She probably has more technological freedom than Mary's daughter. Mary's daughter is seeing this. She's not liking her mother for it. So, I would, if it were me, pretty much do whatever I could to keep that association limited. Now, granted, at school, very difficult to do. Very, very, very difficult to do. My experience has been that this young lady, who is her daughter's friend, will probably tire of the friendship because Mary's daughter doesn't have the freedom that this young lady does. And she wants to do more things. She wants to go to the mall. She wants to go to movies unsupervised. She wants to go to a restaurant. She wants to do things. And Mary's daughter's not allowed. As a result, she'll turn and find herself some new friends other than Mary's daughter who have more freedom. That usually is the end product of this discrepancy in what one peer is allowed and another is not. The one that has more freedom usually gets tired of the relationship. So, I would have Mary not only keep a close eye, and she'll probably have to refuse to allow her daughter to have association outside school with this child, also to see where this mood is coming from, and I would talk to her daughter. I'd say, why do you think you're depressed? What is it? Well, you just don't recognize what I need. And what do you need, honey? What is it that you think you need? I need more freedom. I'm the only one who doesn't have a cell phone. See, when you start hearing stuff like that, that's going to lead you to conclude that this quote-unquote depression would go away if you gave more social freedom. Very common nowadays. Very common. I'm Dr. Ray.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 10 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities.
4G, LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan cost goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile. Everyday living. Effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
We know how much you love Ave Maria Radio, so please consider joining us in our Care to Share program. It's easy. We send you 10 business size cards that give you all the great ways that someone can listen to Ave Maria Radio, and you just give them away. Share them with those you love and those who would really benefit from our great programming. For more information, go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the Community tab to find the Care to Share program link. That's AveMariaRadio.net, Community, and Care to Share.
The Eastern Catholic Re-Evangelization Center, also known as ECRC, decided to host a board meeting at a restaurant with spouses. We took up a side room reserved for big parties. Father Andrew was one of the last to arrive, and within minutes he was rearranging the room. Some of us noticed that the actual setup was not conducive for conversation, but no one did anything about it. Someone said with a chuckle, "Oh, that's Father Andrew taking charge." And he says, "Yeah, and sometimes I'm controlling." I remarked, "I don't mind those who are controlling if what they're doing actually makes sense for everyone." Then I realized there's a big difference between taking control and being controlling. Father Andrew actually rearranged the tables that made sense for everyone. People who just take control don't necessarily think about everyone's best interest. So which one are you? Do you take control or are you merely controlling? And think about the one Jesus would want us to be. This has been a Christ Center communication message. I'm Vanessa Denha-Garmo, a communications evangelist.
Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. This is Look Back Friday, where we take previous calls, edit them at the capable hands of my producer man and editor, Andrew Kruchek, and then I get to talk more about the call. Don't have, we've only got a couple minutes left here on the program. So I want to address something that Mary brought up. She brought up many, many things in that last call, and all of that would have been explored if she came in for a therapy session. Harvard Medical School did a study not so long ago where they very strictly set up the standards for the diagnosis of bipolar. Now, bipolar is, it can be very serious. It can be a very serious type of mental disorder involving psychosis, or it can be a depressive type of bipolar. Well, they found that of the people, and I don't know how they screened these folks, of the people who had been previously diagnosed bipolar by some professional, at least half of them did not fit the more stringent criteria for the diagnosis. That would be my experience, and I would even think it's more than half. What I find is, and did you hear what Mary said? She said that her daughter's moods wildly fluctuate. Can be very, very, very happy, very agitated, then very down, very blue. Typically, when I explore this with parents or with anyone, an adult, and these moods are bouncing all over the place, they give the illusion that they're cyclic. In other words, they have a life of their own, and they rise and they fall kind of on their own, kind of within neurochemical wiring, so to speak. But if you probe and you explore, what you find is that oftentimes the individual reacts emotionally to events. If the event is something that pleases them, that they like, that makes them feel good about themselves, that is a positive, then for a while their emotions could be nice and high. Oh boy, I'm on top of the world. I feel really great. This is great. Did you hear what happened? Oh, yeah, he asked me out. If something happens that frustrates him, somebody says something doesn't go quite right, they didn't get to play in that particular soccer game, some day-to-day frustration that they're not real good at dealing with, they can't roll with it, their emotions take over, down they go. And they stay down there for maybe a day, maybe two, maybe three. There was a precipitating event, as the psychologists would call it. And it creates the illusion that these emotions come and go because of some cyclic psychological process, when in fact it's more accurately called emotional lability. I'm Dr. Ray. Appreciate the company. Thank you so much for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. Walk with God. Hold your children tightly, tightly by the hand.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.